Anyways, that is a good segue into this next semi. That's a good segue into this little mini episode. We're kind of breaking this return of Hot Takes Only back into or out into little mini episodes. So if you haven't listened to the golf portion of it, make sure you check that out. But we made a couple of allusions to this in the last little segment talking about the Pac-12 and talking about college football. So before we get into kind of the what is going to become the new landscape in college football starting in 2024, I do want to go back to last year and the playoff last year. And Willie, I know I'm sorry to bring this up as a big Ohio State guy. Last New Year's Eve, December 31st, 2022, I was watching the Georgia Ohio State game at my old apartment, and my now girlfriend was there. One of my roommates was there, and we had a couple people over. We were just watching college football. It was New Year's Eve, so we made some steaks, some good food. It was a good time. You know, we were watching college football. We're watching the Dogs and the Buckeyes, and you know, obviously there's a lot going on in that game. There's the no call and the targeting on Marvin Harrison Jr. There's CJ Stroud being CJ Stroud and just balling out all game. There's Stetson Bennett responding. There's blown coverage. There's everything you want in a college football playoff semifinal game. And I remember when Ohio State missed the potential game winner, literally falling out of my chair. And sprinting around my apartment because I was convinced that the game was over, that Ohio State was going to win. And that one moment led to the Monday before my birthday, a couple weeks later, getting drunk on my couch, drinking champagne straight out of the bottle after the first quarter of the national championship game. What was it, like 35-7 at halftime or after the first quarter? And then it kind of just became funny after that for Georgia fans. And my first thought was like, wow, this is what Alabama fans have been able to feel for the last, like, what, 16 years or however long Saban's been in charge? Like, this is amazing. So I just wanted to throw that little nugget out there because I don't remember any other sport causing me to feel that roller coaster of emotions quite like the college football playoff. And I think with the conferences changing starting next season, it's going to get a whole lot more interesting because winning your conference doesn't really matter after that, because all the conferences are changing to the point where if you're not part of the Big 12 or the SEC, then you're not in the, like, that can't be kind of the logic. So like if you're a school like whoever's not defecting to the Big 12 from the Pac-12, so like, what, help me out here, it's like not UCLA and USC, but whoever's staying in what's left of the Pac-12, like if they win whatever that conference is, like, does that matter because they're not the same one as USC, UCLA, it's et cetera, like all the other big schools in that conference? So it's like, what are we even doing here?
Yeah, well, that's to be determined. Like, the college football playoff is supposed to expand to 12 teams next year. And originally, the Power 5 winners were supposed to get a bid. So the Pac-12 was supposed to get a bid. But that's to be determined. But, you know, a couple thoughts on what you said. I mean, number one, I'll just say no. I think in the last 80 years, no college football team's ever done a three-peat. So if Georgia were to do that, that'd be incredible. And, you know, while I think this is probably the worst of the three teams, like, I mean, it's just unreal how good the last two Georgia teams were. And then second of all, and I mean, I would love to get your take. Yes or no, do you think college conference realignment is good for the sport?
Honestly, the notion of conferences in college football is, like, I get it, but I think especially in the college football era, the college football playoff era, so since 2015, there has been a shocking amount of bias towards schools that have legacies. And this has always been the case. This has been the case going back to like the time when Notre Dame was actually good. This is specifically targeted at Notre Dame just because they've been involved in something they have no business being involved in when it comes to college football, and their performance in the college football playoff will tell you just that much. So what was it, 2019, when they lost to Georgia on like a last second field goal, last second touchdown, that like losing at home to Georgia, who went on to play in the SEC championship game that year and lost to Joe Burrow, like that was seen as like a win for Notre Dame. And I'm like, I'm sorry, Georgia losing a game to Alabama is seen as like a complete failure, but Notre Dame losing at home is a success. Like, what are we doing? And then what was it, 2012, when Notre Dame played Alabama, it was like 56-7 or whatever embarrassing scoreline it was. And then again a couple years ago when they played Clemson in the first round of the playoff and Clemson boat raced them. Like, Notre Dame and USC and other like legacy schools, like, I get it, there's a history there and they are historically the best teams in college football. Like, the best NFL players have come out of those schools, or not all of the best, you know what I mean. But it's a program with a lot of history, right? That's fair. But history does not mean you are good this year. History means you were good last year or the year before, or whatever year you're talking about. We're talking about right now. And I think 2019 is like the peak example for me because, I think it was 2017 is what it was. No, sorry. Yeah, 2017, the 2017 season when Georgia, I think, was fifth in the final ranking and ended up playing in the Sugar Bowl and just getting, it was 2018-19 because a friend of mine who I met late 2018, an old coworker, he went to Texas. So he was giving me nonstop grief about Georgia losing in the Sugar Bowl that year. So he was giving me a lot of grief about that. Texas hasn't really been seen since then, but you know, that's neither here nor there. But I guess the point with, sorry, this is a long tangent going back to conference realignment. I guess it doesn't really matter anymore because you have teams like Notre Dame who don't play in a conference or haven't really played in a conference up until what, like 2 years ago, and then started playing in the ACC for like a season. Like, that doesn't make sense to me how they get, like, they don't have a conference championship and yet they still, like, they don't have that work against them, but it works against schools that play in like the SEC or the Big 12. Like, there's no real reason for it because you have programs that are going to be either non-conference or in a different conference against completely different schools. Like, Oklahoma not playing OSU is going to be wild. Like, Oklahoma as in Oklahoma State, not OSU as in the Ohio State University.
Bedlam. Yeah. I mean, I think that you're absolutely right in terms of, I think in the current structure of college football, I think teams are almost, you know, you could argue they're penalized in some ways from playing in these elite conferences. I mean, if you're in a Power Five conference that's weaker than the SEC, which is, you know, if you do well, you're going to get in.
Pretty much all of them.
Yeah, Notre Dame. Yeah, SEC is by far the best. Not this year. I actually think
Pac-12. No, the SEC is pretty weak this year. If I'm going to be honest, it's pretty weak this year.
But so it does in Notre Dame's like their own case. That's the fact that they're basically guaranteed a spot if they go undefeated. It's crazy. But to me, Owen, I just want to come out with a bold take. I just think that conference realignment represents, like, in the same, it represents everything wrong with sports, in my opinion. Not everything, maybe not quite as much, not everything, but I hate it so much. I really, really, really hate it. And the reason is because, to me, like, the beauty of college sports is that it's a game for everyone. You know, it's a, what connects people from different cultures in different areas of the world. You could argue college sports does, you know, everybody, no matter where you live, you know, roots for your team, right? You could be someone from a small town in some state, and you have something to bond with from someone in a state on a different coast, or in a diff in the Midwest, or like wherever, or the South, or the Northeast, or the West, you know, anywhere in the country. And college football used to be the best of it. It used to be a game where, you know, it was a great accomplishment to get to a bowl game. You could celebrate it. Every single weekend of college football is still a party. It's still great. You go, you bond with your friends, you watch a game, you go to a game. In a lot of college towns, the whole town, no matter how big or small, it gives the students something to do. The whole town revolves around it. And now everything's going away. The combination of the creation of the college football playoff, which single-handedly, in my opinion, destroyed bowl games because now only one cares about the playoff. And the conference is changing to the point where, you know, not only is no one going to care, I mean, schools in these other conferences are going to have such a financial disadvantage. And yes, you could have the odd school like a Notre Dame or a school that has wealthy boosters that could pay people in NIL. But for the most part, if you're not in the SEC, you're not in the Big Ten, like you're basically irrelevant because you get so much less money. And it just represents everything that's wrong with sports. Because I don't know about you, but I love sports when they're competitive top to bottom. It's the reason that the NFL is so popular. All the games are close, the teams are more even. It's the reason that I'd argue it's the problem with baseball. You know, it's the problem where teams at the bottom just don't have a chance because unless they have developed a great farm system, you know, like Tampa Bay or someone like that.
That we're gonna have to get into that in a little bit because there is a take in there that is, ooh
Yeah.
boy, this
Well, I'll
year.
just say this. I'll say this.
Yeah.
Can they compete? Yes, because there's so much data analytics and there's so much, but point is, if you have a huge advantage if you have more money, and you know you can sign free agents. Now, it doesn't always work out great, but you can.
We're gonna have to get into this in
Yeah,
more.
sure.
We're gonna get into this in more detail a little later. I get what you're saying. Go on.
The point is, it's just I'll just say that was a long rant and just saying it's terrible. And now it's just what's supposed to be a celebration of college sports. They mean so much to everyone. Like they. Some of the biggest passion in the country is college football, and they connect people. And now it's kind of like just care about 15 teams. 15 teams maybe have a chance, and that's it. And I don't think the college football expansion's really going to change anything. If anything, you're probably just going to see, you know, instead of one SEC, one Big Ten, one, you know, you're going to see like three. I mean, that's it. And you know, like
Yeah.
no, yeah. So
So
anyway,
I'll jump in on this one, Willie. I mean, I know you and I come from pretty interesting perspectives because you come from a literal college town in Syracuse, and I grew up in the heart of the South, so college football country, where college football is not just like the thing you do on Saturdays. It is literally religion. Like
yeah.
for me, there are certain things that go ahead of college football in the South, and I can put them on one hand, and it's religion, maybe. And even so, for some people in the South, it is number one, like college football above all else. There's two seasons, football and spring football, or football and spring football, football, fall, whatever you want to call it. So at the end of the day, I think you bring up a lot of interesting points where it skews heavily towards the top teams and towards the rich, towards the bigger programs with money, boosters, etc. But I think there's also a part of it that's not going to go away, which is what you're talking about, is people caring about it beyond basically all else. And I think it's pretty damning to hear where we're kind of headed, where we're just going to see more of the same kind of schools over and over again. My only thing is, like, for me personally, I think 2012 is a really good example for me why I hated the old system. Because, like, yes, you want to say that ultimately college sports are about, like, not winning or losing, because these are athletes who are in their late teens, early 20s, you know, 25 if you're Stetson Bennett, but we're not going to talk about that. But if we're talking about people playing at a collegiate level, like, it's not life or death. Like, it's just for a trophy. It's for the memories you make with your team, your friends, your family, your community, etc. It means something, right? But at the end of the day, it's a sport. And a sport invariably is a zero-sum game. There's a winner and there's a loser. Or there's a winner and there are first runners-up, if you will, in like individual sports like golf and Formula One and tennis, etc. So my point basically with all this is that the old system of a committee of people picking two teams to play each other for the national championship was so thoroughly broken. And it's like, yes, it means something to win a bowl game, and that's part of the history and the tradition and like the pageantry of college football. But at the end of the day, if only two teams get tabbed as the best two in the country, then there's a lot of subjectivity gets thrown into that. And then it becomes like a, well, what about this team? What about that team? What about these other teams that could have easily beaten this team? I mean, what was the final score in that game? Like 45, like 56. I want to look it up now because I just remember that game being the biggest laughing stock. And I'm like, I don't want to see this ever again. Yeah. It was Alabama Notre Dame in 2012.
Yeah, it was bad. I don't know if that was as bad as
it's 42 to 14. So, okay, Notre Dame scored 14. But my point is basically like, the old system of this BCS national championship game, where a committee of people, kind of like the college football playoff committee, like they have now, would pick two teams to play for the national championship. Like, yes, that's great if you have two like clear cut best teams in the country. But if you have like a group of like five teams, one is clearly the best, they're undefeated, they won their conference, etc. Alabama, Georgia, whatever, what have you. And then whoever plays them, it could be any number of teams who are kind of in that same category, but maybe not as good. Like, it just boggles my mind that, like, that kind of decision-making was so prevalent and there's that limited, field of who can be, like, the best team in college football. And I think that's something that, like, yes, you care about the community aspect of it. You care about playing for your school, playing for your region, playing for your friends and family and your institution. That's great. But it's a sport. It's a zero-sum game. There has to be a winner. There has to be a loser. And that's, you know,
yeah.
I just can't wrap my head around, conceptually. Anyways, I can't wrap my head around the BCS format and the old bowl system being any better than what we have now.
Well, I would say that I agree with you in the sense that the old BCS system was definitely broken. To have you just select two teams was really weird. And they're like, it no doubt not only isn't fair, but it no doubt makes the race at the top not nearly as interesting. Now, I would argue, and now from a television perspective, there's no doubt that ratings would agree with what you think, which is the new system, you know, makes sense. And that's what a lot of people think. I just go the reverse, because what you were talking about college football and religion in the South. And yes, I think that the most passion for U.S. sports is college football in the South. I do believe that. But while maybe there wouldn't be as much passion in certain other places, for a ton of towns in the country, college football, relatively speaking, in a relative sense, is as important, or like it's very important, you know, maybe not quite as important, but it's very, very important. And they, in college sports, like that's what they care about. And it means so much to them. And I would argue that to eliminate the chance, because of the financial disparity, of them ever going on a run, or even making a bowl game, which I, like I said, okay, like, yeah, the old system was flawed, but it was a great accomplishment to make. Like, I used to love bowl season, and It was amazing, and it gave them something to play for. And I think the problem now is it's just, you know, like, it's supposed to be for everyone, you know? And unfortunately, this is becoming a have and a have not situation. And like you said, there's usually winners and losers. But to me, in my opinion, if you're not in the Big Ten or the SEC, you're a loser now. And, you know, I just, you know, I, and yeah, I, okay, I come from Syracuse and we're lucky we're still in the ACC. Now, maybe we'll get left behind, but there's just so many towns around the country where they care about it. And now, from a national perspective and from a regional perspective, national perspective where no one talks about them anymore, or from, you know, a regional perspective, you know, I think it's really sad.
Yeah. And yeah, I think there's a lot of merit to what you're saying, and there's a certain sort of soul that's being taken away from it because the focus is all on the big spectacle of it all, the who's playing for, you know, the college football semifinal, the college football national championship. It just becomes a lot more of a you aren't the best, so you don't matter on a national level. I mean, I don't know. I guess it becomes a thing of like where it's naturally going to follow the trend of like a media market, right? Like, where are the eyes going to go? Biggest market. And that's kind of why you'll hear anecdotally people say like, oh, the league wants like this team to play this team. The league wants the, you know, like baseball wants the Yankees in the World Series, or like the NFL wants the Cowboys in the Super Bowl, you know, things like that, where it's all about the market share. And I think there's a lot of merit to your what you're saying, and people feeling like they're basically being left behind. But I think it just comes down to kind of the way that trend has kind of gone over just in society over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, where a lot of people in smaller towns have felt like they're kind of being passed over. And I think there's a, you know, there's an element of, is this avoidable? But there's also an element of, you know, the concept of media coverage in a small market is seen, you know, I mean, Will, you went to Syracuse, you know, I'm sure you knew a lot of people from Newhouse who tried to get a job in, you know, market 75 or market 100 right out of college, which is an accomplishment. So it just, I don't know. I think it's just a question of a manpower and like the ability to actually give every individual town and every part of the country the attention that the kind of they want. But also like it doesn't matter. You know, to me, I think anecdotally growing up around a lot of people who really, really cared about high school football as well. I mean, I went to an international school. We didn't have a football team, so we didn't have this like Friday Night Lights culture in my kind of circles in high school, which was really weird in the South. But I know that kind of thing exists where the focus is definitely that. On a college, taking that to kind of the college level, you're not going to have that same sort of like mass attention or like I guess what you're insinuating is that the number of eyeballs on it is just people like the average person's not going to care about this game. And I'm not saying that's supposed to be the case, but I think that there's a certain sentiment of this is my college town, this is my high school football team, like this is all I care about. I don't care about some person in LA or some person in New York like watching this game. Like, I care about it. This is like my community, and that's all that matters to me. So I get what you're saying in the sense that like, yeah, it does take away from a lot of those like kind of mid to smaller program kind of stories where they, you know, go on a big run and play in a bowl game. But I think at the end of the day, there's also a little bit of this like this concept of like this is ours, and it doesn't matter if we have national attention or not, you know.
Well, no, I mean, I think that was really well said, and I hope so. I hope they, those communities still care about it. But, you know, if you think about the European Super League, which didn't happen but could happen in some ways, right? I mean, why I hated it, and, you know, part of the criticism is it was just a closed league, and there's no chance of that Cinderella story happening, or you even getting the chance to compete. And is the college football closed? Is the college football playoff a closed league? No. I think the expanded playoff is great. You know, you're going to get more teams, but I would just argue, you know, you're, if you're a small market team, you have literally zero chance now. I mean, like, with the combination of NIL and with the combination of conference realignment and TV money, I mean, there's zero chance a Boise State beats an Oklahoma in a playoff game. Just, like, forget it.
I mean,
so but any small market team, I would argue, for the most part, unless you're Coastal Carolina and you have Zach Wilson, like, I don't know, like, maybe, like, randomly, but you're at a huge disadvantage. And then what I would argue is it's just, then you have these teams where in the other kind of, you also just eliminate, in my opinion, like, then, you know, there's another segment of fans where, so I really do care about the small teams. Like, I really do care about that. But then there's also this issue of the medium-sized teams. I mean, you lose a ton of rivalries. There have been so many rivalries lost in college football. It's been happening the last 10 years. It's going to happen even more so. And now I'm a team, and yeah, okay, if you're a Georgia fan, you could say, you know, like, or maybe not Georgia, but, like, you know, you could say that, you know, man, it's great. I get to play a great team every week, and now every so often I'm going to play Texas or OU. Like, that's great. But for all these other fans, I mean, like, I don't think, I mean, losing rivalries, like, that stinks. Rivalries are what draws, like, honestly, like, rivalries are what draws people to sports. Like,
oh, for sure.
Rivalries are what, good rivalries are what makes people want to watch.
No, that, for sure.
The fabric is also being destroyed in that sense. I think that the teams that aren't going to play each other, or that it also, I just want to be very clear, it does not feel the same when it's out of conference. It means way less. It has way implications. I saw it firsthand when Syracuse, Georgetown, you know, two biggest basketball rivalries, Syracuse, Georgetown, UNC Duke. And Syracuse, Georgetown, like, lost everything. They still play every year. And I think there are so many rivalries, you know, the backyard brawl, Oregon, Oregon State, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. Not to mention there's all these other just teams you love seeing. Your, you know, you're a Kansas fan. You love getting to see your team beat Oklahoma. You're not going to get that chance anymore. Why would they schedule you? So I just, I don't know. I mean, will they? Yeah. So anyways, I just think it's bad for everyone but the top one.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I think the one thing that I would say, and I think this is obviously an issue that is not going to, we're not going to be able to cover it in one episode, but the highest paid coach, Willie, in college football is Nick Saban. No surprise there. Coach of Alabama, most successful program in history, most national titles, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know the story. Nick Saban is a state employee. He is paid by the state of Alabama.
Yep.
Kirby Smart is paid by the state of Georgia.
Yeah, Brian Kelly, LSU.
Brian Kelly, the state of Louisiana, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Or I guess, is it, do they call it the state? They call it states, but they're parishes, not counties. Louisiana is a different one. But my point is basically, for all of the kind of bigger programs, especially in the South, but in the state, in the country in general, a lot of the big programs are going to get their funding from the state. A lot of their money and resources come from the state level. I mean, Ohio State, Willie, is the only state university in Ohio, is it not? That's why they call it.
Well, it's not. There are other ones like Cleveland State, but like
the,
you know,
it is the big one, right?
Yeah,
like the University of Georgia.
Yes.
There's also Georgia Tech, great school, but it is the
Yeah.
school. Florida, same thing. Like, there's the U, but the University of Florida. Like, it so it becomes a case of like, I get what you're saying as far as the playoff not being good for middle or smaller schools. But at the end of the day, unless that school is bankrolled by like four Jeff Bezoses or like four Elon Musks, they're probably not going to have the resources to be able to compete with schools where the highest paid state employee is the football coach. You know? So it to me, it's one of those things where like USC is an example where they just have a ton of wealthy alumni that people that, you know, when you tour USC, they talk about like the Trojan network, the Trojan family. I remember that from when I toured USC. And the more I've lived in LA, the more I've lived in Southern California, the more I've kind of understood what that really means and why Lincoln Riley decided to leave Oklahoma, where he was very successful, and take on the head coaching job at USC because of NIL agreements, the ability to basically pay players. So all of a sudden, USC becomes a destination program, not just a historic football program or a historic athletics program. It becomes like a destination. Like you live in LA, you're getting paid to live in LA. You're getting paid to be in Hollywood. Like it opens so many opportunities, and I think it becomes a so much more of a pull that for schools like Georgia, Alabama, South Carolina, Florida, Tennessee, all of the schools in the SEC, they want to respond. They don't want to have that. They don't want to have their tradition taken away. Like that is their thing. Like, you know, I grew up in the South. I didn't. How many people are just like all they care about is like Auburn or Alabama or Georgia or Florida? So they're not gonna just like, oh, I'm not gonna just let USC like take all this. I'm gonna put more and more money into it. So the state puts more money, boosters put more money into it, and it becomes like an arms race basically. And like there's no real solution for those kind of middle to smaller programs other than hoping they get bankrolled by a billionaire, which, you know, is a kind of it's a pretty cynical way to look at it, but like at the end of the day, I don't think there's any other solution besides that for bigger teams because I don't know. I think it's a really nuanced issue, and we're not going to be able to get into the real nitty-gritty and the real nuts and bolts of it in just one episode. I just think there's so much here.
So yeah, two last things I'll say is one is that the NIL thing is very interesting and it's huge. And you know, you look at if you're bankrolled, unless you're, you know, you can compete if you're bankrolled, it's true. I mean, look at a school like Texas A&M, who has like the number one recruiting class or close to it the last couple of years. And now even though they're a train wreck.
Jimbo.
But you know, I look, Texas A&M, College Station's actually has over 100,000 people. So let's not get confused. They're a medium-sized city. But again, like to me, what I also like, what's so stinky to me about these solutions is I think in the present system, I don't like the conference realignment, but I think the expansion was good. But the problem with the conference realignment, one of my issues with college football right now is that, you know, mo a lot of teams, you know, Alabama and Texas was a example, but they were willing to schedule tough non-conference games. And in my opinion, right now, you know, in theory, the college football playoff would be great if you have one or two, you know, smaller teams that or group of five teams that are really good that had a chance to compete. But, you know, like think about a school like UCF that went undefeated or something, and now they're in the American. But now I think the problem is that, you know, another additional problem is that if you're in a conference like the SEC, I see zero chance that you ever want to play a tough non-conference game now. Now that you the SEC got even tougher, if you're a Big Ten team, which added four really good teams, why would you play a non-conference game? And I'd actually argue it's going to be even harder for teams to get in the playoff, because now it's like, if you have four teams, well, what differentiates Ohio State is that they beat, you know, Notre Dame. Or, you know, I guess what I'm saying is, like, I think this conference consolidation is ruining the small market teams less, because no big team's ever going to schedule them. And I think that's the only way. Like, if you're in a mid-major conference, everyone's going to say, well, okay, you're 11-0, 12-0, 11-1. Like, who'd you beat? But that's not your fault, because most schools won't schedule you. And now, like, but now I still think there's a slim chance they will, you know, but now I don't see it.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. Like, it, and I think I kind of alluded to this at the top of the segment, but the notion of beating the other teams in your conference, winning your conference, is, it means so much less now, because you look at how many teams are in those conferences. Like, Oklahoma is not going to win the SEC.
No chance.
I don't think they have a chance of winning the SEC, because who did they really play before? I mean, in their conference, like, okay, yeah. Oklahoma State, sure.
Yeah, they mean they beat UCF.
UCF. Like, I mean, who else is in their conference?
BYU,
like, Kansas.
Yeah, Kansas State, BYU.
BYU. Right. So winning your conference doesn't mean the same as, like, winning the SEC. So even if you try to weight it a certain way, like, oh, a second place finish in the SEC is like winning another conference, no one's going to look at it that way. Or at least the committee is not going to look at, you know, a team failing to win their conference favorably against compared to another team winning their conference in a weaker conference. Yeah. They're going to favor the team that won their conference, because they beat all these other schools, but this team lost to the team that beat everyone else. So I think it's so messy right now that I think the idea of conferences and winning your conference just doesn't mean anything anymore. And that's the sad part. Like, it just doesn't mean anything. You know, and as these alignments, these realignments continue to play out, and they start playing out next season, I think it's just going to be like, it's just going to mean less.
And conference championship games are going to be even less popular now.
Right. It's a kick in the groin for people who watch, you know, like you and I, who watch a lot of college football, and who follow the season, two teams going head to head in different parts of the conference, playing in the conference championship, and what that means for the college football playoff. I mean, yes, we've had in 2021 when Georgia lost in the SEC championship game, but still got into the playoff. They got into the playoff because they were really, really good, right? That has happened several times under Kirby Smart, where they've been really, really good, didn't win the conference, and didn't get into the playoff. 2019 or 2021, rather, was just like the one year it happened to go in their favor. So, I don't know. There's still an element of subjectivity that just rubs me the wrong way with college football. And as far as people deciding, people who don't necessarily, I don't know how to describe it, but it's just, there just feels like there's something missing about the way that we assess which teams deserve to play in the playoff. And then even if you expand the playoff to 12 teams, you still have to figure out how to schedule that without making players play extra games unnecessarily. Because then that goes into, would that not also go into Heisman voting? You know what I'm saying? I don't know. It there's a lot of stuff that needs to change for college football to survive in its current. I mean, I don't think it's bad in its current form, but it's, something has to change, and something obviously is going to change dramatically next year. I just want to say, though, that CBS losing the rights to, or not losing the rights, but ESPN getting the rights to the SEC is going to be kind of sad next year, because there's something about listening to Brad Nessler and Gary Danielson do a big SEC game that's just kind of unmatched. Like, people don't like Gary as much. I think he's fine. But Brad Nessler just has, like, he just sounds like the SEC. Like, if you tell me, like, tell me a guy who's, you know, show me a color or a play-by-play guy who is the SEC. Yep. I would point to Brad Nessler, because, like, that's what SEC football sounds like. I don't know. That's just me.
I completely agree. And I actually like Gary Danielson. And I also think the time slot, 3:30/12:30/, you know, I think it's great. And now they're probably going to move more games for TV.
Yeah, more primetime games. Yeah. Which is great, because Sanford Stadium under the lights is one hell of a thing. And I do need to get down there at some point in my life.
Absolutely.
To go to a game at Sanford. But God, those tickets are, I mean, it's like $150 for the cheap seats for like a regular season game.
Crazy.
let alone how much the conference championship is worth at the Arthur Dome in Atlanta. But
yeah.